This is our disclaimer. The statements made and opinions expressed during this podcast are our own personal statements and opinions and should not be construed as those of any entity or institution that we may have been employed by or affiliated with at any time in our professional lives. Additionally, we take patient confidentiality incredibly seriously. For that reason, any reference to stories about patients have purposely been modified so as to not identify any particular patient or location. Finally, while we are both doctors, nothing that we say in this podcast should be construed as medical advice. If you are in need of medical advice, please contact your personal physician. Remember that although we are doctors, we are not your doctors. Thank you.
Good. Hey, Colin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Happy to record this episode of ER Docs and Crucial Talks.
Yeah, welcome, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. It's been a little bit, right?
It has. It's good. Keeping you guys hungry.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've been planning this episode for a while, and it's great to finally sit down and do it, but we've done a lot of thinking about it. But before we get going, what's new with you, man? What's going on?
Nothing, man. Just been, as usual, very busy. Been in a great spot, starting to warm up. I bought myself a new road bike.
Oh, very cool. You know,
first time in 20-something years, so...
Now are you a guy that spends more than like me $99 at Walmart on a bike? Is this like slightly nicer than that?
yeah. This is something slightly nicer. We got a bunch of hills out here. So Riding these hills is scary going down and hard going up. So you kind of need a bike that has, you know, good brakes. And also I got that old man bad back. So I got to do all these things. And yeah, so it turns into a chunk of change that I had to work extra for.
Well, 20 years, it sounds like you're still being pretty frugal if you haven't bought a bike.
Yeah, that's true.
Susan and I still have our bikes that when we moved into our condo in Chicago 17 years ago, they were like $99 Huffy and $100 Murray or Team Murray. They still work to this day. All I have to do is tame the suburban streets of my little community. I don't have to go up or down hills, but I did ride on a friend's, he got a pre-owned Trek. Is Trek a big name? Trek's a big name, right?
Yeah, that's what.
And pre-owned, so used. This thing was like light as a feather. I just felt the difference. I definitely felt the difference. There's no doubt. A nice bike is a nice bike. I'm not sure when he told me the original price tag. I'm not sure that the sort of like the curve of, you know, value to what I get in return. But I'm also not, you know, ascending and descending, you know, hills and steep inclines like you are. So if safety is an issue and, you know, getting through the trail, you know, comfortably is an issue, I get it. I mean, you got to have.
Yeah, maybe we should go back. I should listen to our podcast on fear because, man, I get scared going downhill. Once I hit like 20, 25 miles an hour, it's
25 miles an hour downhill.
Oh, dude, when you're going down, if any real cyclists out there listening know that that's nothing. Like, I got a buddy, Troy, you know, Troy, he was going down, like he did these rides in like the Pyrenees. Is that the name of the mountains in Europe? Okay. He said he was getting like 65, 70 miles an hour, dude. So 25 miles an hour for him is like a piece of cake.
So I mean, 20 to 30, even let's say 65 miles an hour downhill, there's a lot of like luck involved here too, right? I mean, if you hit the wrong divot or something like that, I mean, you're not in a cage like a car. You're just out there. But is that part of the thrill?
Well, for me, it's pure terror. I guess so. I guess that's part of it. You got to be on. I mean, you can't.
Sure.
You know, you can't be halfway doing it to keep it PG.
Sure. But
I'm excited about changing. You know, no segue there. But I'm excited about today's topic. I know the listeners are probably gonna enjoy this because although like we texted about this conversation between us is gonna be brand new, and I think we'll have different ideas about it.
I agree. So you know, with this so this topic is called I Have Enough, and as I've been doing my runs, running my miles out there, I'm listening to what I call the Mentors in the Sky, my podcast, and one of them was talking about a conversation between two famous authors. I'm going to be real honest with you. I had to Google who these guys were. I kind of remember who they were. But one is Joseph Heller, who wrote this book. I know the book. I didn't know his name. Catch 22. And the other one is Kurt Vonnegut. I think I read Slaughterhouse-Five in high school. about a prisoner of war, and Catch 22 is about this guy who's a fighter pilot who basically doesn't want to be a fighter pilot anymore because he's afraid of dying, and to declare that he's crazy would get him out of that situation, but to declare that he's crazy indicated that he wasn't crazy and that he had to keep being a pilot, hence the Catch 22. So these two guys are like famed authors, and at the time that their books are being published and very popular, they're still not millionaires by any stretch in that era of time, you know, like a Stephen King or a you know, whoever you would think is a big author these days, a Patterson, Coombs. It wasn't like that back then. So there happened to be at this billionaire's house where this billionaire is throwing a party. And in the party, Joseph Heller and Kurt Vonnegut are just walking around this mansion, marveling at every room that's got wealth and riches and statues. And as they're looking at one of these, like, you know, items of luxury, Kurt Vonnegut says, "You know what, Joseph, in one day, this billionaire will make more than you'll ever make in your entire lifetime based on Catch 22, the sales of Catch 22. And Joseph Heller smiles and he looks at Kurt Vonnegut. He says, "You know what? I have something the billionaire will never have." And of course, Kurt Vonnegut says, "Well, what's that?" And he says, "Well, I have enough." And when I first heard that, I didn't know immediately what he was talking about. And maybe a couple miles in, and the podcaster elaborate on what he thought it meant. It seemed to mean that he achieved a point in life where he felt like no matter what the possessions or the coins in the bank account totaled, he had enough in life and he had found a place of content. Whereas the billionaire, so to speak, was always seeking the next thing, the next possession, the next acquisition, the next professional goal or leap or threshold. And because of being the billionaire and being that type of vanguard in a financial realm, you continue to do that and never seem to find the end point. Cullen, can you reflect on that?
Sure. So, you know, this topic of enough, I've thought about it before. And a few years ago, when my wife and I went to this restaurant, and this restaurant had a motto of "I wish you enough." And I remember I bought a mug from this restaurant that says "I wish you enough." And I'm curious as to what the listeners have also when someone first brings that up, because I had, you know, some healthy Cullen skepticism. I thought about a couple things. One was a case, which, you know, I'm happy to talk about. And this
was, yeah, absolutely. We love the cases.
A case from several years ago where when I was working up north, and this woman came in with severe abdominal pain, and I can't remember her exact age, but she was in her either late 80s or early 90s. Mm-hmm. And she had what we call bowel ischemia. And so her intestine was dying, likely from a lack of blood flow through a certain vessel. And so the surgeon came and saw her and offered her surgery, but it would be a very extensive surgery where she'd have to have a lot of her bowel taken out, and you know, she might not make it through the surgery, and then also she might not make it through the recovery. In fact, probably wouldn't make it. And so she, after taking all this in, she elected to not do the surgery. And I just remember her saying, like, "You know, I've done enough. I've had enough." And she ultimately, I think a couple of days later, she went on hospice and passed away. And so, you know, we've all had those cases. I think when you work in a hospital setting where, you know, someone has something tragic that, you know, they're not in a position to fight, or they decide not to. And so, although that is tragic, you know, I remember we've also had cases where folks are very content with that. I know that you recently talked about a very similar case with the pacemaker and such this podcast. And so, when I went to that restaurant, I remember I thought about that. And so I have, you know, I had that Cullen skepticism where, yeah, I do wish that, like, you know, do I have enough? You know, do I really need these things that I strive for? But at the same time,
I enjoy challenges. I kind of almost think that, like, if I ever thought that I had enough, like, I don't know, that's for the me in 30 years. That's not for me now. Like, I enjoy striving and trying for things. And like, when I stop that, part of me wonders if that would be detrimental to me physically, mentally, relationship wise.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you're saying, if I'm hearing this right, that at the moment you look at things that drive you, what drives the billionaire, so to speak. And you're thinking the things that are driving you are relatively or absolutely positive in your life. And there's not like a negative association with them. They're not pulling away from you. They're not depleting you of anything. They're nourishing your life and they're watering the garden, so to speak. You said something interesting. You said, I have enough of something like in 30 years. Mm-hmm. What, and I know you're just kind of arbitrarily picking a number 30 years, but what happens in 30 years when you arrive at 30 years? What do you think happens then to these positive things that are driving you today?
In the gotcha.
There's future Cullen, there's Cullen now. And future Cullen seemingly will be content. I guess nobody knows future Cullen better than current Cullen.
And maybe I never will be. I guess, so first of all, I think there are some healthy parts to thinking that I have enough when it comes to materialistic goods, which also is something that we've kind of talked about several times on this podcast, in that, you know, is that billionaire chasing more money really helpful to him or her? Probably not. And so there are things like, I have enough material goods or wealth to not, that I should be happy with it. You know, I should be content. I have my needs met, you know? So that's good. But in general, like, I enjoy new challenges, and maybe 30 years, I won't enjoy new challenges, but, or I will still enjoy new challenges, but I don't want to have this thought that I have enough, that I've done enough.
I see what you're saying.
You know, maybe ever, but certainly not now. And yeah, I don't know.
You mentioned when you have enough, when you get to the point where you have enough, there is that thing that you do want to get away from, which is the having the materials and possessions control you. Susan and I were just talking this morning. We have our morning conversation over coffee, and we were talking about what's the best color car? And I love a clean black car. I think it's just mint. I think it's just sophisticated. And I don't care what make or model, a black car, clean, is flawless. However, if it's not perfectly clean, it could be the ugliest color to me. It could be the ugliest color car to me, because you see all of the dirt, you see all of the salt and the debris. And then when it's clean, if it ages, you see swirls in it. So then you're sort of, I'm a kind of a car guy. So then I'm like compelled to like polish it all the time. And a buddy of mine said to me, Raj, he says, never own a black car or a darker color car for the same reason, because you don't own the car owns you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, oh yeah, you're right. The possession owns me. I'm always thinking about how I'm going to upkeep it, how I'm going to just finish that, the polish, the this, the that. And you mentioned something similar with it. And I think your sentiment is the possessions and the money and the drive for that owns you. It reminds me of a quote from Will Smith. He said, not too long ago, he said, when I reflect on my life, when I didn't have any money, I could always say, once I have money, I'll be happy. I'll be content. All of my problems will go away. He says, then the problem occurred where I did find all this money and I became really wealthy. And the problems stayed and they never went away. And now I had nothing, no excuse and nothing to say that in the future when I have this. And so he was talking about this concept called the arrival fallacy, which is, once I arrive to this point in my life, then everything will be okay. And Will Smith says, hey, I got all the money I thought would fix everything. And more money, more problems is kind of what it came out to be for him.
Was that before or after he slapped Chris Rock across?
This is a good point. This is a good point. You know, there was a lot of, it's interesting. If you paid attention to that, I think it got old pretty quick, but he did have a lot of like self-reflection about his life and this and that. I think this was afterwards. It's interesting when a moment like that, it seemed like he went through some kind of traumatic experience that made him act in a way that wasn't conducive to who he wanted to be. And as a result, he did something that I think made a lot of us think about, have we ever been in a similar situation where we had so much sort of subconscious rage about something that we act out and the whole world saying something's wrong with Will Smith, you know, something's wrong with this guy. Are you okay? You know, and that sort of thing, like the thing itself, the event itself was terrible. But then you ask Chris Rock, are you okay? But Will Smith, are you okay? And it's this is kind of like maybe a testament to that is this arrival fallacy. Are we looking to how much of our life currently is when I get this, then I'll be okay. Because I feel like, Cullen, in the meantime, while I'm waiting for that, am I really living my life properly until that moment? What do you think about that?
Well, I think once again, for material goods, that is definitely valid. I don't think we ever arrive. We're always searching for that next thing. I mean, we've been through the medical school thing. I'm sure our listeners can all relate, but you know, it was like, what if I just get into college, if I just get into this college, then I'll be okay. And then you get into college and instantly that's gone. And then it's like, okay, if I just get this degree, or I could get through this class, then I'll be okay. And then it's like, okay, if I get into med school, then I'll be okay. Then if I get into residency, then I'll be okay. And it's like, it never really ends. And you don't really get, you get some momentary satisfaction. I think when you look back, you get a lot of satisfaction at the things you've accomplished. But you know, you never really are going to arrive. You're just going to reset your, what arrived means, that bar. And I don't know, is that always such a bad thing? I mean, that topic of enough, sometimes I just also think that like, man, I mean, this is my skepticism, right? It's like, if I think that I have enough, not just materially, but like education wise, or I've done enough, like, it seems like that's like the next step is just death or it's laziness. And something that I am kind of classically socialized to be opposed to.
I love that you brought that up. That's perfect, because this laziness is the nefarious backdrop of what we're talking about. It's the thing that, tell me if that is the thing that drives you. It seems like it drives some of this for you. Tell me about that.
Well, I recognize that accomplishments, whether those be physical, mental, learning something, finishing that book. Yeah, I'm never going to arrive, but the journey itself is very satisfying to me. And if I feel that I have enough, does that imply that I've reached the end of the journey and therefore like there's no sense in striving? And then I could see myself just becoming like, you know, someone that just kind of sits around or whatever it is. And that doesn't appeal to me at all. I know what I enjoy and what gives me satisfaction in life. You know, would you want to teach your kids that like, hey, buddy, that's enough. Like you got A's, like that's enough. You have enough.
So that's a good question. I'm glad you brought that up. Well, let me first ask you this. In your life, are there different seasons of this is enough? For instance, you and I, we had a very similar season of this is not enough when it came to being driven from high school to undergrad and that whole matriculation that you perfectly put. I even remember the first day of medical school. I was so proud of being in medical school that first day. And I graduated college and I was depressed because it was over. The thrill was over. And now here I'm in medical school. And then I graduated medical school and the first day of residency, I was kind of depressed. And of course I was in a residency I didn't want to be in. And it's just like, you keep starting over. And like, it's, you know, you think, okay, you're absolutely right. Have there been different seasons of this is enough for you? Are you a different, do you look at this is enough differently now as a Cullen currently compared to like a past Cullen? And how has it changed?
Well, of course, I'm using hindsight bias because I don't ever know that I and like I said, until I never thought actively about the fact of enough. I definitely think that we thought about, I thought about material goods and how much not to let those own me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't ever really own them. I mean, that's a Stoic philosophy. Like, you know, they're all temporary. Has my concept of enough changed over time? I think as I've grown older and we've been on this journey of awareness, to a certain degree, it has. But to a certain degree, it hasn't. You know, I think that I've always enjoyed new challenges. I probably always will. And I'm okay with that.
Reflecting on myself, in the last couple of years, 3 years, I've, I guess a, you know, colloquial way to say it is I've hit the brakes. Mm-hmm. And I've hit the brakes. Usually something like that happens in anybody's life because of some external environmental stressor or some kind of like a, you know, pivotal event. For me, it's probably a culmination of a lot of things. And I can start with the ending, which is I feel way better about things now having done so. But what I had to hit the brakes on was slowing down a bit professionally to be a human being. I used to hate that term. Be a human being, not a human doing. Human being. I had to live in the place where I stood, and that was be a more interactive dad, be more engaged with family, be more engaged with the important people in my life, and live the moments in between waiting for the next thing I was going to arrive at, because I was absolutely probably overconsumed with that next step and that next bar that I had to, you know, hurdle over, which I always did. But, you know, like any dopamine rush, the receptors upregulate, and then the next foray is, you know, even higher and even more complex. And everything comes at a cost. As we go through this is enough. Everything comes at a cost. Now, maybe if Joseph Heller and Kurt Vonnegut talked to that billionaire and really sat down with them, got to know him, they might have found out that this guy really does live in every moment. He, you know, is surrounded by his kids and grandkids, and he's, you know, sitting there meditating every morning, Bikram yoga in the evenings. May, who knows? But the standard sort of pedantic understanding would be, no, this is a narcissistic billionaire that only wants to keep driving forward for the sake of driving forward. So I see your point that what you're saying is in your reflection that what drove you and drives you to this day is positive. And sounds like you've done a lot of self-reflection on that, or at least enough to know that you're in a healthy spot. I found that I had to make some adjustments and live a little bit more in the moments. I remember once I said to you, we were just kind of on a private chat, and I said, man, I just feel kind of like lazy today, because I really didn't do much that day. We were just reflecting on what was going on today. And you said, Raj, I don't ever think you are capable of being lazy. And initially, I was just going to jump to the next topic, just kind of blow that off. But that stuck. I mean, that you told me that 6-7 years ago, but that stuck to this day. And what it told me was this concept of, you know, you're my mirror. You know, the people around me are my mirror, and I'm your mirror. And you are looking at me and telling me what you're seeing. This guy, Charles Cooley, had a quote that I hear a lot in the podcast, which is, I am not what I think I am. I am not what you think I am. I am what I think you think I am. So we live our lives through the perception of other people. I feel like I'm living up to who I think you think I am. And sometimes I felt like I was being driven in that regard. And that was not necessarily always a healthy driving force. And so I made an adjustment and series of adjustments so that I'm being driven by the things that I think I am, you know, understanding myself through self-awareness, this journey you and I are on. And so that when I am being driven by something, it's because it's what I want to do and what I think is healthy and also respectful and, you know, in a good place for everybody around me, versus working on a perception of other people of me. Does that sound weird? Does that make sense?
That's a lot to take in. I feel like we should have a whole podcast on this theory of you. I am what I.
So I'm not. I'm not what I think I am.
Not what I think I am. I'm not what you think I am. I'm what I think you think I am.
Charles right? Cooley. Yep. Okay. Yep. Absolutely. I mean,
that's big. That's
that will definitely be a different podcast next. I think. Yeah, I agree.
Let me back up.
Yeah.
To this topic of enough and kind of tell you what my takeaways are.
From yeah. Thank
it,
you.
At least as far as what
for sure.
We're talking about. And then I'd like to hear yours is that, first of all, we have to be aware that as humans, if you're just on autopilot, you're never going to have enough. Like, so it is helpful to think about what do I have material wise and what I'm striving for, and is my life out of balance because of that? Maybe that's what we should talk about. You know, you talked about how your life was kind of out of balance mm-hmm. and you were striving. And it was, you know, part of that was probably striving to work more, to make more money.
Absolutely.
And so one of the questions of enough, and I think that's what Kurt Vonnegut and Heller were talking about with this billionaire is like, when does this guy have enough goods, money, art,
yeah,
et cetera, yeah. House,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so I think that's a great thing to think about. And whatever we're striving for, is it in balance? And I personally am going to be okay with the fact that I do have to strive at something. And so whether that be physically, mentally, learning something new, taking, you know, last summer I took golf lessons. I was always like, you know, I don't like golf. I could never like golf. And I found myself living next to some golf courses. So I was like, well, and it's actually a blast. And I've been
awesome.
Wrong my whole life.
That's awesome.
You know, but I enjoy learning something that I'll never be probably very good at. But you know, it's fun. So anyway, getting back to that, like it's okay for me to be able to strive and not have enough in all aspects of life so that I'm always challenging myself. But it is good to reflect on, is my life out of balance because of these different things that I'm striving for? And is it, you know, impending on relationships or my well-being or making sure that I have enough, you know, see if I have enough material goods, which the answer is 99% of the time going to be yes. And then what am I striving for? And is my life out of balance because of what I'm striving for? So that's my takeaways. You tell
I like
me.
That. And I'm glad you're doing that. We were actually having a great chat with Jack, and Jack had brought up some great pearls that we could use to kind of just lift up the podcast a little bit and to organize our thoughts. And so your takeaways are great. I'd like to reflect on that. The best one I heard from that is a self-awareness and a recognition that while you're in the pursuit of what it is you're striving for professionally, personally, spiritually, can you find an ability to have self-awareness, or do you have people around you that you can surround yourself with, that you trust, that can be your mirror, that you can either, they can spontaneously tell you something's off, or you can reach out to them and you have actively practice reaching out to them. Hey, here's where I'm at these days. Tell me, I ask you this all the time, Colin, what's my blind spot? Weren't we just chatting a couple weeks ago? And I'm like, hey, I got to bring something up with you. There's a kind of an interesting thing that happened. What's my blind spot? And you brought up at least three things that I was not thinking of. And I said, how great is that? Okay. All right. And that's where the balance came from. That's where the balance came from. You can meditate excessively, which is, you know, oh, everyone should meditate. And that could be out of balance with everything else, right? I mean, you could be so meditative that you neglect other parts of your body. Someone said to me once, your life and your spiritual world and your professional world, your whole life in general is like a house. If one room of the house is really dirty and falling apart, we tend to need to keep every other room in the house tidy and well-kept. But we, you know, while we're working on that one room, so we have all these different rooms that can support us through this. And that's one way to do it. The takeaway I have is that this is enough instinctively feels like it's about being driven for the finance and possessions and that sort of thing. So right off the bat, I think that might be the easiest thing to tackle and say, how do these things own me? Because if they own me, I can't own them. Where is that coming from? Where does that need for these things come from? Finding the roots of that, addressing that if possible. Second, do I have some lack of self-worthiness? I was listening recently, the difference between self-confidence and self-worth is a vast difference. I can act and behave with a lot of self-confidence. You've probably seen me be very self-confident over the years. We're physicians, we're in the ER, in a trauma bay. We have to be self-confident. But I think over the years, I've worked on my self-worth, which is a very different concept. And is this, am I enough, is a different question there with my self-worth. And again, counting on the closest people to me, my mirrors, to tell me, am I worthy? You know, Matilda's, where you first gave me your value of my self-worth and what you thought I meant to the world was the first time I really got to know you in that way, you know, and here we are years later, we're still talking to each other about our self-worth. And the last one is this enough? So in my life, so long as it affects other people around me that are close to me, the people who make up my life, am I putting the arrival fallacy ahead of what's already in front of me? And am I living my life and enjoying what's already in front of me? Or am I neglecting the opportunity to live right here where I stand because I'm waiting for some moment in the future? And I love your case because the woman said to you, probably with a lot of a heavy heart, probably with a lot of sadness, but maybe a lot of happiness internally. And there's a lot of beauty in that story because she probably reflected to some degree, I think, because I'm a human and she's a human, that she had lived a life that she didn't need to fight further for prolonging it. At least for her, what she had achieved, what she arrived to was enough. And can you imagine, Cullen, you were there in front of her. She gave up her life or what little prolongation of her life because she was so confident that she had enough. What other exchange and transaction could tell you that that person has enough? Nothing else. She gave up her life. So that's my takeaway, man.
Yeah, that's I love it. And I can, you know, being your mirror.
Yeah.
Raj. Oh, geez. Yeah, I can tell you one way that you have found enough. You have had enough Cheesecake Factory in your life, you know, enough saline injected meats. Enough. You'll never have enough of that menu, that never ending.
No, you can't have enough because you can't get to the end of it. There's 17 or 18 pages, double sided. The font gets smaller and smaller because they keep adding these delicious, you know, freeze-dried meals.
how many pages in real life is there?
It's probably like 30. And then there's a separate menu for the light menu, like if you're, you know, counting carbs, and that's like 45 pages. It's laminated, so if the kids get, like, you know, sauce on it, they can clean it up real quick. You gotta love laminated restaurants where the menu's laminated.
They probably inject saline into everything there,
I'm
right?
I'm sure they inject, like, all sorts of preservatives, sodium, potassium,
canola oil.
You name it. Yeah. Well, thanks, man. This has been a great sort of return to what our grassroots are. I wanted to tell you, I reached out to Shane Parrish, you know, Shane from
the Project. Yeah.
And on behalf of the two of us, and I just said, you know, we appreciate, you know, discussing, you know, podcasts like yours. And I didn't have any sort of request of myself. I just want to say thanks. And he just reached back. He's like, thank you so much for reaching out. That means a lot. So thanks to all of the mentors in the sky that have driven us, the Ryan Holidays, Shane Parrish, Tim Ferriss, all these people out there that, you know, help drive our thoughts, right? We are a culmination of the thoughts that we are. And where do we source those thoughts? It starts from somebody, somewhere. Our parents, you know, your mom and dad, my parents, our wives, and are the people we care about. So, in that spirit, man, I tell you what, I'll talk to you real soon. I appreciate the chat.
Yeah, we've had enough of this podcast.
this has been enough.
Yeah. No, thanks, Len.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye. Thank you.